since last week to this week, but these lights seem brighter this week than they were last week. But anyway, I hate to say, by the way, having been at Central as long as I have, I hate to say things like that because with a house full of engineers, they immediately try to figure out what needs to be fixed. And it's not what I'm asking or suggesting even. I'm just saying it seems a little brighter this morning. Anyway, maybe it's because it's not so bright outside. But welcome this morning to our class. We started last week talking about this idea of a spiritual debrief of our social crisis. We're going to continue talking about that this morning. I wanted to, I guess, start off with the fact that I'm celebrating something today, which is the fact that all four of my football teams are undefeated. So I have my local teams and I have my hometown team. So my local team, of course, Alabama won yesterday against Tennessee, and so they remain undefeated. And also my Tennessee Titan team is undefeated. And the Seattle Seahawks are playing tonight, and they're currently undefeated. And the University of Washington, who is yet to play a football game, is therefore undefeated. So, therefore, all my teams are currently undefeated. I don't think I've ever been able to say that before at this point in a football season. So I wanted to take the opportunity to make that point. Anyway, it's good to have you here. I wanted to start us off with a prayer. You know, yesterday, we had a funeral service for one of our graduates who graduated back in 2013, Steve Ronk, who was baptized here, attended here for a while, and was married here. So he passed away on Tuesday, and so I wanted to have a prayer for their family as we get started this morning. So let's pray. Father, I thank you for this time that we can gather together as your people, finding this point of refuge from an ever-assailing world, to be able to come before you, to be able to huddle at your feet, to be able to come before your throne, knowing that you care, that you hear us, that you are concerned about our every need. I pray, Father, specifically for Stephen Ronk's family. Father, as they wake up this morning, knowing not only will he not be in their lives actively today, but he will never be actively in their lives again. And Father, I pray that you will comfort them, that you will fill that void with your presence, that your Spirit will invade them and comfort them, and that you will draw them ever closer to you through this time of tragedy. Father, I pray for our guys at His Way, as we certainly, many of them knew Him, and others just know the journey and the struggle. It's a time of concern, of discontentment, of fear, and I pray that you will comfort us and help us find strength and hope in you. Father, I pray that you guide us as we address the issues that we have before us this morning. I pray that this be helpful, that we be drawn closer to you, and that we will come to know you better. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. All right, well, welcome. As we start this, last week I kind of talked about the idea of connection. We talked about that and the importance of it at a time in which disconnection has become a major feature of all of our lives. And so I want to talk about kind of in the next few weeks, I want to think about what the impact of that disconnection has been and what do we do about it. So I have a quote that is one of my favorites that I say often, is that you live what you believe. And I know that maybe in some ways that sounds simple and sounds pretty basic, but the reality is your life reveals your faith. What you believe is expressed in what you do. James emphasizes that pretty heavily, right? This faith is expressed in what we do. And what you do, therefore, becomes a testimony of who you are. In Proverbs 23:7, it says, "As a man thinketh, so is he." So, and Jesus will say that it is out of the heart that the mouth speaks. And so what we say is a revelation of who we are. And I know it's interesting because I don't think we like that very well. because we're quick usually to speak and then try to retract what we've said and try to backpedal. And a lot of times we'll say, well, that's not what I meant. Or even people will defend us saying, oh, well, you know, he has really a good heart and he really intended right and all these kind of things. But Jesus said that it's out of the heart that the mouth speaks. So whatever's coming out of my mouth is a direct reflection of my heart, is what Jesus says. So therefore, there's times certainly where we say things that we don't like what that reveals about us. And we realize sometimes as something comes spilling out of our mouths that we realize that our public relations department was apparently off duty for a few moments and let that slip out. But the reality is, it reveals us. I'm always fascinated now with the phrase, you know, we have all this political correct language, and it's like now everybody, when they get caught lying, they say, well, I misspoke. That's our new phrase, right? Our misspoken words, as kind of a way of being politically correct and handling things when the reality is my social manager didn't handle my mouth very well. So I want us to think this morning, though, with this idea that you live what you believe. Now, we have certainly faced, in the last 7 months, some major issues. I pulled these statistics off the World Health Organization sometime middle of the week. I know they're changing every day. I didn't take the time to go back and look them up again. I felt like it was probably close enough. But the deaths worldwide are over a million, 41 million cases in the United States, some 200,000, 8 million cases. And so I was thinking about that as we look at that. You know, we look at those numbers, and I mean, I've been in a ton of conversations in which some people are extremely concerned about that and panicked. Other people are mad about the fact that we're so concerned about it. And some people, you know, want to argue about the statistics aren't really correct, and people are skewing this and skewing that, and it's all about politics and all this kind of stuff. The reality is, though, that this is happening, right? However you want to understand it or see it, the reality is it's happening, and it's impacting us. And it's a legitimate concern. It's a legitimate fear. And the reality is, whether it's this or something else, we all have fears. We all have fears. I was having lunch Monday with a gentleman who owns his own engineering company here in town. He's been extremely successful. And he was talking to me actually about starting a recovery program in Gunnersville. We were having lunch and discussing some of that. And he's very successful. And he was talking to me. He said, you know, I feel like I've always operated with a kind of a competitive attitude. I was always trying to just win. My biggest thing was winning. That success was driven by a desire to win. But he said, I've been surprised as I get to know a lot of other people. Most of the people I'm around who I know who are successful because they're afraid of failing. He said, I've never been so impressed with the fact that fear seems to be the driving force in people's lives. That's way stronger motivation than anything else. And it was interesting because in the conversation, as we moved into spiritual conversation, he had some pretty serious fears that were motivating why he wanted to get together. And so fear is a huge motivator. You know, I pulled up this morning on my phone, I looked up phobias, list of phobias, okay? And I was just going to, it's almost such fine print, I can't hardly see them. Alphabetized. I mean, literally, A through Z list of phobias, right? And there's things like agoraphobia, which is what? Agoraphobia is the fear of open spaces. A lot of people have that one. Some people have acrophobia, which is the fear of heights. Of course, we're all familiar with arachnophobia, right? Fear of spiders, right? Anyone seen that movie? I always like this one. It's actually in the list of fears. It's always one of my favorites. Arachnobutanophobia, which is the fear of peanut butter being stuck to the roof of your mouth. but you can go on. I mean, there's tons of them. There's autophobia, which is the fear of being by yourself. I mean, there's, about anything you can imagine. I mean, there's even bibliophobia, which is, of course, the fear of the Bible. No, the books. But some people practice that by being afraid of the Bible. Fear of books. And there's a ton of them. I had a very good friend of mine who is big, young, athletic, strong kind of guy, carried himself very manly, very kind of tough guy. And he was deathly afraid of clowns. I remember we had one of the opening days at one of our thrift stores. We had a clown, and the guy came in and got his clown costume on and came out, and this guy saw him and was scared to death. I mean, he ran out of the building. He wouldn't go back to the thrift store. I mean, he would not. He was like curling up like the fetal position, overseeing a person who looked like a clown. One of my favorite experiences one time was I was counseling a couple. I won't say who they are. They're not here, but they could be. And I was counseling them, and we were counseling down in my downstairs. This was premarital counseling, and we went downstairs. There wasn't a lot of lights on yet. I hadn't turned on the lights, and so it was just kind of the moonlight kind of shining in the room. And Selwyn had a ventriloquist puppet, sitting in the couch, you know, with the ceramic head and the little body, you know, sitting there as the moon was shining right on it as we walked in the room. And this girl freaked out. I mean, it was every horror movie's worst imagination to see that that in our living room. So we're all afraid, though. I mean, the reality is we all got fears. And so I was thinking, just to open it up for a couple minutes, and again, I'll try to, there's a microphone up here, by the way, if somebody wants to come and be heard over, we're going to kind of figure out how to do this thing coming up so people online can hear what you have to say. But, I mean, so we can take the microphone around, or if you just want to say it and I can repeat it, whichever you prefer is fine with me. Ed's now our official microphone person. Engineers, right. You're engineering a solution. You're a microphone engineer. Okay. A nuclear microphone engineer. How's that? Is that good? So my question is, as we've gone through 2020, I think a lot of fears do come up in our lives. And like I said, we all have fears. I was interested in what some of the fears that you have been wrestling with have been. So now I'm asking for us to be honest.
Fear of nobody responding.
Okay, the fear of no one responding when I ask a question. That's right. The only thing worse than that, asking a question when you've got lights on you and nobody responding, is telling a joke and nobody laughing. So I try to not start any lesson with a joke, because everyone likes to do that to break up the kind of get the crowd going and get the feeling better. And then if it doesn't work, it's like now you're in negative ground. So better not to do that and have that happen. And my jokes are never good enough to count on a laugh. If you think about it, there's obviously we have health concerns. We have political concerns, social concerns, personal concerns. I mean, whatever is going on that's kind of been a concern that's maybe popped up in your life during this season, I'm interested in kind of what are some of the fears that we're facing? Raise of hands. Raise your hand. You got a fear. Something that came up. Anyone can raise their hand. Nobody wants to say anything. I'm going to name people and make up fears for you, and it's all going to be recorded forever. All right. Mr. Steve Lowry, Central Police Officer.
Yeah. Is this on?
It is.
Okay. I guess one of my biggest fears is it's not of death or of dying quickly, it's dying slowly. You know, it's having some long protracted illness that just takes away a little at a time, it lasts over years and years and years. because I've, as an emergency responder, I see lots of people that are in that situation, and it is not pleasant.
Right. Okay. There you go. Thank you. Legitimate fear. Anyone else have one? Fears. All right, Brian.
I've always been afraid of drowning.
Okay. Okay. Like,
it's kind of claustrophobic, kind of that kind of fear of being, you know.
Okay. All right, fear of drowning. Okay, that's good. Anybody else have a fear? Everyone else is absolutely fearless. Oh, there's Chloe way over there.
Be right back.
Ed's not only going to be our microphone engineer, he's going to be the most physically fit person in our church.
I would say that I have a fear of loss of liberty and personal autonomy, the ability to make the choices that I feel are best for myself and my family.
Okay. All right. It's a good one. Thank you. I know currently in a lot of the political stuff and stuff going on, those kind of fears are very, very real for people. So thank you, Chloe. Hey, Jim?
A fear of acceptance. I'm a people pleaser type person, and I've drawn that back to I want to be accepted.
Right. Okay. All right. So probably the fear of not being accepted. Okay. All right. Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Grant?
It's my fear of rejection.
Okay. All right. Fear of rejection. Okay. All right. Kind of goes along with what Jim was talking about. Okay, good. Any others? Okay, well, that's good. Oh, Jonathan, you got one.
Don't
okay.
Ladies first.
Okay, all right, we'll let ladies go first and then you, okay?
The fear of letting people down.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, all right. Fear of disappointing people. Kind of goes into the people-pleasing thing kind of too, right? Okay, obviously that's a big theme here.
I'm always feared by dolls, and I was fear of about I used to fear of clowns at a young age, and I just scared dolls too.
Okay, so dogs and clowns. Is that what you said?
I think it was doll.
Dolls. Okay, dolls and clowns. Okay, all right. Okay, thank you. Well, you know, the point is, right, we all have fears. How do we handle our fears? What do we do in the face of our fears? So now take your microphone.
this is another question.
What do you do? How do we handle our fears? What are some of the solutions we have? Yes, Joel. I want, just for Ed's sake, let's everyone answer, like, from corner to corner to corner. Best we can.
Just face them head on.
Facing them head on. Okay. All right. Face them head on. Okay. Yes. So handle our fears by facing them head on. That's a good answer.
Avoidance.
Okay. Avoidance. Okay. Jim said avoiding them.
Trust in God and know that He loves me.
Okay, trusting God and knowing He loves me, okay? So fundamentally, God loves me, therefore, it'll get worked out. It'll be all right, okay?
Just take one day at a time, you know, just handle each day, the trouble enough that each day has.
Okay, all right, just one day at a time. Keep myself in the day. Don't get too far out ahead of myself, okay? Anyone else? All right, well, thank you. Thanks, Ed. I don't think I have any more questions
now.
This one.
Are you done with questions?
I may have another one at some point. I don't know, but thank you. That's right. That's right. You know, I was just kind of flipping through the gospel and kind of reflecting over that. And fear kind of dominates the story of Jesus, right? I mean, the story starts with an angel coming to Mary and saying, "Do not be afraid," right? The Lord is with you. He tells Joseph, "Don't be afraid. Take Mary as your wife." the disciples, you know, they're out in a boat and Jesus walking on the water and they're afraid because they see, think they see a ghost, right? And then Peter, when he's convinced that it's Jesus, gets out of the boat and then he starts walking on the water until he gets afraid that he's walking on the water and there's wind and waves, and then he starts drowning. And so, you know, the apostles afraid, the apostles afraid of the wind and the wave in the boat. And so Jesus calms the storm, and then they're afraid of a guy who calms the storm, the guy in the boat. And so there's fear every which way. Jairus was afraid when, after he found out his daughter had died, that Jesus said, "Don't be afraid. She's only asleep." And so there's a lot of fear that Jesus is helping people address when you read through the Gospels. In fact, probably if you really flip through it and think about it, there's just, I mean, almost every story is in some kind of fear engagement that Jesus is helping to address and helping us to overcome. So this topic of fear, I think, is certainly one that God has some really powerful suggestions and solutions to. I want to read one passage in Luke 12, in verse 4. It says, "I tell you, my friends, do not fear those who kill the body and after that have nothing more that they can do. But I will warn you for whom to fear. Fear him who, after he is killed, has authority to cast into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him. Are not five sparrows sold for 2 pennies, and not one of them is forgotten before God? Why, even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, you are more value than many sparrows." And so, you know, he talks about kind of the idea of what we've talked about. The biggest one is the fear of people, right, and their opinions of us, in which he says here, don't fear that, right? There's no reason to fear that. Fear somebody who can do something more devastating, who can determine eternity. And then he goes on and says, however, understand that you're so valuable, you shouldn't be afraid at all. If the Father cares about the sparrows, if he cares about the grass, if he cares about all these things, won't he do so much more for you, right? And so the encouragement is for us to trust. So what I want to kind of address some today is, what do we do with our fears? And you guys had some great suggestions. I want to try to cover a couple of thoughts this morning. And so the first one is in Matthew 25. In Matthew 25, you have the story of the talents, in where Jesus tells a story about a master who's distributed talents to his servants and then leaves them for a period of time to see what they do with their talents. And he comes back and then he does an accounting of how things went, right? And the one who had been given 5 talents gets 5 more, and the one who got 2 talents made 2 more. And then the one who had 1 talent comes forward. And so this is what the one who had the 1 talent says. He says, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours." So fear caused him to do what? Nothing. Yeah, kind of bury it, do nothing, be paralyzed. And I think a lot of times that's what fear does to us, right? It kind of paralyzes us. It isolates us. It causes us to draw in and to be afraid to act. "But his master answered him and said, 'You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered no seed.'" And he goes on and has some judgment against that servant. But the thing that I notice is this. One, the master doesn't say that your perception of me is wrong. You know, he said, "I viewed you as a hard man, reaping where you don't sow." And he doesn't refute that idea, that your perception of me apparently might be correct. Right? You legitimately should be afraid. I'm a kind of person that's kind of hard and should create a level of fear. However, what do you do when you're afraid? And he goes on, he gives him some specific things. You should have at least put it in the bank or done something with it. But the thing that I think is interesting that really kind of is shocking to me and a little uncomfortable is that the master calls this fearful, paralyzed servant, wicked and slothful. Those are pretty strong words, right? That's coming from the mouth of Jesus, right? Who's referring to people who don't take the talent that God gives them and utilize it effectively because they're intimidated by fear as wicked people and slothful people. I don't like those words. I'm okay with being fearful, you know, because I realize everybody is. But wicked and slothful are not phrases that I want to apply to myself. And my tendency is to say, well, that's a little hard, and you should understand my situation, because my situation's different than everybody. I understand why a lot of people, you know, are behaving that way, but not me. My fears are legitimate, and I have good reason to be this way, and on and on and on and on. But I do think it's challenging. I think it's worth being challenged by the idea that Jesus is suggesting here that wickedness and slothfulness, laziness, is a reaction that he's not pleased with when we fear. And the reality is that this paralyzing fear is what ultimately leads, in a lot of cases, to addiction. My experience is that most people get into addiction because they hit challenges in their life that are intimidating and fearful, and they don't address them. They don't get over them. They don't work through them. They simply kind of avoid them by medicating themselves, ducking things, and those kind of things, which therefore keep them paralyzed. And the more you do that, the more paralyzed you get. And the problem becomes, it becomes kind of this downward cycle. I was talking to a guy last Sunday who is scared, intimidated, overwhelmed. Life is more than he can handle. So he takes meth, which then makes him stay up all night, paranoid that the whole world's out to get him, right? Which only now makes it worse. Because now you're not just battling the real enemies that you do legitimately have. Now you get fabricated enemies that are also out there doing things. And now you're just in a real cycle whirlwind of paranoia and paralysis and fear. But all of our fears, if not handled in some level of faith, is going to cause that. I remember having a good friend who I studied the Bible with a number of years ago. It was the first time I ever met somebody who was legitimately agoraphobic, being afraid of going outside. And I've met people who are uncomfortable in crowds. I mean, that's kind of not uncommon, you know. And some people who don't like being in busy places. And those, some people I've talked to aren't comfortable coming to church because, you know, it's just too many people, it's overwhelming, and that type of thing, kind of feeling. But this guy was overwhelmingly agoraphobic. So as I met him, was reaching out to him, he got to the point that he was uncomfortable coming to church. He'd meet with me personally, but he wouldn't come to church because it was just too much. And so, you know, I'm trying to be understanding. Okay, well, you know, let's just meet on the side. We'll get together. And then eventually, I remember he didn't show up to work for a few days, and people were afraid and worried about him. And I remember going to look for him. I went to his apartment, and he wouldn't answer the door. I finally got into his apartment, and he was, the lights were all off. He was curled up in a ball in the corner of his bedroom with no lights on, scared to death. He was scared to turn on the lights. He was scared to get out of his bedroom into the living room. And that's what fear does to us if we let it have its way. As soon as it steals something, it's going to steal something more. I mean, I think I mentioned it last week. You know, the thief, right, Satan comes to kill, steal, and destroy. Jesus came to bring life. Fear is part of that thievery that Satan uses to destroy us. And so the question becomes, what do you do with that fear? And I'll share with you this. When I was a kid, I remember a vivid experience where I was in Boy Scouts, and we were camping, and all of a sudden, and it had never occurred to me before, all of a sudden, I woke up in a panic because I felt like I was just hemmed in and couldn't breathe in a tent, you know? And I'd never had that experience before, and I was trying to, you know, as a kid, you're on one hand, and you're in Scouts, you're panicked, but you can't let anyone know you're panicked, right? Can't act that way, so you have to just try to figure out what you're going to do while you're panicked in this tent, and you know it's like you want to just kind of, you know, run out of the tent, rip it down, do something. You got to get out of there immediately, and you're like trying to figure out how to manage that situation. And then I don't remember ever having that thought or experience before until a few years ago, as an adult, I was getting on an airplane to fly out from here out to Seattle. And my family was with me. I remember I was sitting in the middle seat. Andrew was on the window seat, and Brianna was on the aisle, and I was in the middle. And all of a sudden, I mean, I hadn't crossed my mind. I got into my plane seat. I was sitting there, you know, I'm ready to go, and we took off, and everything was fine. And then all of a sudden, I got this overwhelming feeling I couldn't breathe, and I was just, the plane was just kind of, all of a sudden, this plane that, you know, is a vast, big 747 felt like it was becoming, you know, like the smaller and smaller and smaller, small little cylinder, you know, just flying through space. And I remember just feeling this overwhelming sense. And all of a sudden, the front seat felt like it was just like right there in my face, and there was no air, and there was, and everything was crowding in on me. And I remember I was trying to manage it somehow. And so I'm trying, Andrew had the window seat, so I kept trying to talk to Andrew and look out the window. I thought if I looked out the window, maybe I could, you know, that'd be, and I didn't want to tell Andrew I was panicking, because, of course, I mean, even whether you're a Boy Scout or whether you're a dad, you don't want your kids to think, you know, you don't want ever people think that. So I was trying to just keep him in, and Andrew was like pulling up a pillow, trying to go to sleep on the plane, and I kept saying, so what about da-da-da, and what about this, and what's out there, what do you think we're at now? And he's like, Dad, would you shut up? I want to try to sleep. You know, no. And I'm like, and after a while, I can tell you more. I remember the seatbelt sign had not even come on yet, I mean, gone off yet, so you're not supposed to get up, and I got up. I couldn't do it anymore. I was panicked. I walked to the back of the plane, a little more space. The stewardess is like, sir, you got to go sit down. I said, I'm not sitting down. I remember in that moment, being there by the back of the plane, looking out the window of the door, I thought it would be better for me to throw this door open and jump than to stay in this thing. That's how panicked I felt. What do you do with that? How do you handle that? And not long after that, I found myself in a situation where I was traveling a lot and flying on airplanes often. And I would be sweating the night before, panicked about the idea of having to get on planes. And some of the places I had to fly to were small little towns where you got off the 747, you got onto a little puddle jumper with four people, you know? And you were supposed to, like, you know, hold the pilot's lunch for him while he's flying, kind of thing. You know, it was scary. And it was overwhelming. How do you manage those things? Now, I could say, well, I'm just not going to fly. Well, then that ends up, what, limiting my life again. Now, I've just chosen one thing I cannot do that's going to start crowding in on my life. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to kind of fight this thing. People talked about, Joel said, confront it, deal with it. That's what I'm trying to do. So I came up with strategies about things to do, read books, pray a lot, have a strategy, get an aisle seat. I mean, I tried to come up with a lot of different strategies to manage that situation, which we do to this day. I mean, so when I take trips, she always books the flights, which I appreciate, and we always have to find aisle seats for me, and it's not always the easiest thing in the world, but I appreciate her determined efforts to do so. Now, by the way, with COVID, by the way, and they have every other seat not taken open, not so bad. Like, that's the problem. Just too many people on my plane. That's the problem. So I want to think about what that looks like. And, you know, there was one of the things that I think, and it kind of goes back to what Chloe mentioned earlier, because, and I'm not sure if she was actually saying this, but I think she was. I had heard her this way. Is that one of the great fears we got today is a fear of uncertainty. We don't know what's going to happen. This virus, we don't know what's going to happen. We started closing down businesses, and it's like, we don't know what's going to happen. What's going to happen to my job? What's going to happen to me financially? And now we're going through an election cycle in which we don't know what's going to happen to our country. Who's going to become president? What the effects of that are going to be on the economy, on our liberties, on all these different things that are core values and concerns of ours, things that we've valued and cherished for a long time. So there's a lot of uncertainty. And it struck me not that that's not much unlike a time that the people of God faced. And I thought specifically about the end of Moses' life. You know, Moses had this burning bush experience. God had called him to go back to Egypt to lead the people out. You have these 10 plagues and all these amazing things happen. They eventually, Israel escapes, about 1 million people. They go from, I mean, really, the Exodus is about Israel going from pretty much a family to kind of this amalgamated group of slaves to then a nation. And so Moses bringing them into not just freedom, but nationhood. They have to be a people, a nation, a country. And so there's a lot going on. So Moses certainly delivered, but he's also kind of the father of the nation kind of thing, right? And so he has led them out through all these challenging and difficult times. They've gone to Moses for everything, and Moses had the answer for everything. Sometimes they didn't like the answer, sometimes they didn't like the answer, but the reality is at least they had somebody that they could go with the question to. And all of a sudden, Moses is now getting to the point of getting ready to die. And there's nothing more challenging for a group of people than transition of leadership. And especially the people of Israel, because Moses has been the man. He's always been the man. There's been no other man but Moses. And so they're facing this challenging time. And if you look, think about it, movements face those same kind of things. I mean, Martin Luther King being assassinated was a huge blow to the civil rights movement in its time. And Nelson Mandela or Mahatma Gandhi or any leader of a movement, if they're taken out early or leadership's not ready, and that happens in churches. One of the great challenges with churches is if a pastor or minister comes in and builds a church up, and then he's transitioning, retiring out, who's going to take his place is a huge crisis. Most churches don't do that well and face huge challenges. Mayfair has been going through that for a number of years because Gary Bradley kind of took that thing from a very small group of people to the huge church that we know today. And then Gary's getting ready to retire, and you know, the challenge of Mayfair, they recognized probably 10 years ago, is what are we going to do about that transition of leadership, because most big groups don't handle it well. Companies, founders of companies all of a sudden, going away. I mean, Steve Jobs and Apple and those kind of things, same type of challenge. And so as the people of God are coming before God, asking the question, what are we going to do? They are struggling with it, right? And God gave them an answer in Joshua 1:9. He said, "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." Don't be afraid. Be strong and courageous. Because why? Because the Lord is with you. You know, Joshua has taken Moses' place. It's not like the whole chapter is of God going, "Joshua is a great guy. Let me give you 27 reasons why Joshua is your best choice." There's no conversation I know about that. The whole conversation is about God, not about Joshua or about Moses. It's about God. I'm with you. So whether it's Joshua or Bozo the Clown, or Bozo the Clown, it doesn't matter. It's God. I'm with you. And that's the thing that's going to matter. And that's the thing that's going to carry us. That's the thing that's going to move us forward. And so one of the things that I wanted to share is that courage is not the absence of fear, but the confronting of fear with faith. It's kind of what Joel said. I think a lot for a lot of us, we think that courage is simply not admitting our fears. In fact, I know when I've panicked in Boy Scouts in a tent, the last thing I want to do is tell somebody I was afraid. You don't want to tell a bunch of Boy Scouts you're afraid, because you're going to be ridiculed the rest of your Boy Scouting experience. And for a lot of us, we just have a hard time. I mean, even when I ask the question, what are you afraid of, right? That's not the first, I mean, I could ask a lot of questions and Ed would have been running all around this room quickly, but I asked that one, it's like, well, what do I want to say here? Do I really want to admit it? No. Then when you're kids, people have things and they're afraid of things, and all of a sudden that becomes their label for the rest of their life. And so we don't want to admit those things. And so courage for many of us becomes pretending we don't have a problem. Just put a happy face over it. And that's not what God says to do here. Be strong and courageous. Don't be afraid, because we're going to walk through this thing with my presence. That's the answer. That's the antidote. You know, when I was facing claustrophobia on an airplane, you know the number one suggestion that people had for me was about how to manage that? Drugs. All you gotta do, man, is take Valium, knock you out, you're fine. Won't bother you a bit. Right? I use Dramamine. Dramamine always makes me tired. Pop a couple Dramamine. Won't bother you. Is that addressing the problem? No. It's just medicate. My fear isn't being addressed. It's just, I'm just sticking my head in the sand on it. And yet, I talk to so many people, that's their answer to fear. Well, I just go to the doctor. He can take my fear away. Right? With this pill or that pill. I got anxiety. Well, there's anxiety medicine. There's this medicine. There's that medicine. There's this and that. I'm not saying there's not, every time I get in this, there's reasons to take medicine. I got that. I'm good with that. But we're in an over-medicated society that the answer is always a little pill. I mean, a lot of the guys that come his way went to a doctor for a legitimate reason. The doctor said, the answer's a pill. And they thought, really? The answer's a pill? Well, if that pill works, why not that pill? And if that pill worked, why not that one? And there we go. And pills become the answer. And part of the message becomes, you can't handle your fear. You can't confront your fear. You don't have it within you to do it, so you medicate it. God doesn't say that. He says, we're going to go right through it, you and me, and we'll be fine. That's courage. That's strength. That's the call of God. So, I have a whole nother path I'm going to go, and we got 2 minutes, so I don't think I'll be able to do that. I don't know how live stream works, but I know in most of my classes, no one's disappointed if we get out early. So I'm going to cut it off right here, and we'll pick it up next week. And I got some other things and some specific scriptures that have 5 great points about how to deal with fear that we'll talk about next week. That really are the exciting part of this lesson I'm looking forward to, is really getting those 5 things and how to bring those things into reality in our lives, and that we can walk through this time of uncertainty with confidence. I will share one other thing. Selwyn had a conversation with one of her relatives a while back, and they were panicked about all the things going on in the world, and they wanted to talk to Selwyn about it, and they were talking to her about it, and she said, well, aren't you afraid? Aren't you scared? Aren't you anxious? And someone said, I'm absolutely fine. I'm peaceful. This is joyful. And then her relative was mad at her. How could you be that way during a time like this? And I think that's what our world wants us to do. The world wants us to panic with them. But we're a part of an unshakable kingdom. And panic isn't our response in times of uncertainty. Thank you.